Cassie be with us tonight. And as we look into this last lens by which people live, we ask that you would use me and that you would speak through me and that it would have clarity in Jesus' name. Amen. You have your sheet in front of you. I got four of these worlds up here. This is about rhythms of life. The rhythm for each of these is separation and reunion, conflict and vindication, emptiness and fulfillment, condemnation and forgiveness. And that rhythm is we vacillate back and forth between the positive and the negatives. The one on top here is always the negative, and it's kind of like a sine wave. We live in rhythms. You've had highs and lows in terms of your life, I'm sure, and highs and lows in terms of your personality and everything else. Well, those are the rhythms that we live under. This last world that we're going to be looking at is suffering and endurance is the rhythm that goes with this particular thing. In the issues in world one, it's the issue of the universe and all that's out there and how do I become one with the universe. This one has to do with the history and time, and that's where it's worked out, the conflict and vindication. This one has to do with the self, and the self is where everything issues out of in terms of whether or not this is an emptiness or a meaningless existence, or is there fulfillment in terms of life. This one has to do with condemnation, and the issue is demonic, the evil of the person. And how do you deal with that and gain forgiveness? That's what this one deals with. The feel of all these is one. This one's longing. I also think of homesickness. That kind of feel is it. This is an angry kind of world in which nothing's ever right, and you have to make sure that you're always working to do that. In world three, it has to do with emptiness, and the emptiness brings on an ache of being or lack of being in terms of life. In world four, the feel is one of feeling guilty. And it's a one of ought to do this or ought to do that. And when you don't do it, you feel guilty. And so that kind of works that way. The obsession. And we've been dealing with the obsession of these, which is the dark side of it for these weeks. And we're going to get done with those here in the next week or so. This one is abandonment or isolation in world one. That feeling of being abandoned in life, and that's the dark hole. That's the place where it is. In world two, it is oppression or violence that we have to deal with in terms of our violated lives. In this one, it's a matter of insignificance or impotence that you're just not really there. It's the hollow man. In the movie Chicago, Charles O'Reilly, sings a song about the cellophane man. He's just kind of in there, but nobody notices him because you can see right through him. Then world four, the obsession is the inability of self-control, that I am aimed towards sinning and I can't do anything about it, and I fight that all the time. In world five, The issue is life itself. In world five, the feel is to be overwhelmed with suffering. And the obsession or the dark side of world five is that meaningless experience as engulfment. The best way I can describe that is to be overwhelmed. And this person is a victim, and they are plagued with this being overwhelmed in terms of life. And in the atonement, I'm walking through these, but I'm going to move on to this one. Love is outlasting, and it's done with long suffering, which is the word for patience. And Jesus is the suffering servant in this world. He is our companion in our journey of suffering. And the salvation has to do with the survival in terms of that, and to survive and get out of it. Now, I want to start and work on this dark hole here that we have in terms of the obsession. World 4, the focus is guilt. I ought to be this or I ought to do that. And that comes from the inside out, you might say. Self is the central or diseased agent, and it's working from that. In World 5, the focus is suffering. Long-suffering is also the term that is used in the King James Version for patience. That's what it is. And you are suffering from that which comes from outside. Self is not the agent for it, but the victim of it. In Job, you get a, you know, we always talk about Job, and Job is the one book in the Bible that really kind of leads you to this kind of thing. Now, where are you, Job? Do you slip away from me? Here you are. And I didn't write the scriptures on the board because there's no room. So, Abby, you write them down for Tim, will you? Job chapter 16. Verses 7, 8, and 16. Surely now God has worn me out. He has made desolate all my company. And he has shriveled me up, which is a witness against me, and my leanness has risen up against me. It testifies to my face. If you skip down to verse 16, my face is red with weeping, and on my eyelids is deep darkness. Although there is no violence in my hands, and my prayer is pure. This is a man who is overwhelmed by the condition of his life. He is suffering. Now, if you know the story of him, he's lost all his family. He's lost everything in terms of his life. He is overwhelmed by this. And he is crying out in these scriptures about the suffering that he is enduring and how it's coming at him. If you turn to 17 verse 1. My spirit is broken. My days are extinct. The grave is ready for me. These are cries of desperation and being overwhelmed and the problem that comes with it. Job is a picture of the suffering of life. Now, it ends up in the story, well, one more out of there, chapter 23, verse 17. For I am hemmed in by darkness, and thick darkness covers my face. This is about suffering, folks. Now, when you read the story of Job, that he is redeemed, there is an order to the things in terms of mystery. If you're World 2, you're looking at it vindication. He is vindicated at the end of the story. Or you might say he finds his place at the end of the story after all this goes through. He is not guilty of it in World 4. It's not my fault. I'm not guilty of this. But in reality, the story of Job is the story of suffering. And so it echoes and reverberates in the dark hole, the obsession that has to do with suffering. And from World 5, when you start looking at World 5, World 5 is that he isn't different from anybody else. He is everyone. He is me. He's you. And this is about suffering. If you write this stuff down, suffering is morally indiscriminate. It has nothing to do with right or wrong or who deserves it or who doesn't deserve it. It is morally indiscriminate. Suffering. In Psalm 22, verse 1. It says this. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Anybody ever heard that before? Who said that? Jesus said it from the cross. And it goes on, why art thou so far from helping me from the words of my groaning? Oh, my God, I cry by day, but thou dost not answer, and by night, but find no rest. My God, why have you forsaken me? Suffering is morally indiscriminate. I'll give you a couple more out of Psalms. Psalm 80, verse 5. Thou hast fed them with the bread of tears and given them tears to drink in full measure. Psalm 6, verse 3. My soul also is sorely troubled, but thou, O Lord, how long? How long, O Lord, do I have to suffer in this? Is basically what he said. Now, I'm going to tell you something about suffering. Suffering swells to fill the soul. I don't care if it's a hangnail or you're suffering from a terrible back injury, you've had a death in the family, whether it's a problem with your job, loss of job, or whatever. Suffering fills the soul. And this world, world five of suffering endurance, is the world where all the other worlds end up. 2/3 of the world go hungry to bed every night. At least 25% of the United States is below the poverty level. But even those who are below the poverty level in this country are nothing compared to the people of the world. Poverty is everywhere. There are recruits for World 5 everywhere. And all you need to get a ticket to ride this particular world is for your doctor to come in and say, you've got cancer. And suddenly you're on the horse. And you're ready to ride it. Suffering brings us all down to where? Words like expendable or terminal begin to take on new meaning in certain situations. Now, World One is cloaked in the mystery, waiting to be recognized with the world or the universe, and trusts the world. You know, I said that's, oh, I'm one with nature, and we trust that. World two, there's no victory in this world that can be really won, because it always comes up that even if you get vindicated, you're back in it again in another kind of conflict. World three, there is really no fulfillment to be realized. The emptiness that is inside of you might find purpose for a moment, but then it dissipates and goes away, and then you're back to it again. That emptiness on the inside. World four, there is no guilt that defines the world. Everyone is guilty in the world. Everyone. There's not one of us that's without sin. And it comes from inside of us. Well, world five, it has to do with the dimensions of life altogether, with this kind of conclusion. That's the way things are. It's just the way things are. And everything has the weight of fact. It doesn't matter if you're ready or not. It's just your turn. Nothing can be done. Life is the predator. Another way of expressing it is life causes cancer. So if you're alive, guess what? There's nothing that can be done. So living is suffering. In the darkness of this world, when you are in the pits of this world and suffering is all you have, that is the darkest hole that there is. Why? You know, why do suicide bombers in over in the Middle East do what they do? Well, they've got nothing for them in this world. They get promised all kinds of things if they martyr themselves. But the truth of the matter is they see no hope for their lives in this world. It's just suffering. Now, Paul talks about the suffering, and he lists things that count for nothing. He writes about it. The positive function of this world, you might say, it's kind of like the refiner's fire. It doesn't matter if you're in shipwrecks, or you get scourged, or you're imprisoned, etc., etc. That's what he talks about. It gives him strength to push on. Paul knows too much. There's no prize to lure us forward other than the quality of life. And it's not on this side of this world. Now, the light part of this, the illumined part, which we'll deal with later on, more so than now, is one forges on. Persistence is its own prize. I just keep at it. And so the light begins to echo the dark. One is resolute because that's just the way I am. I just keep pounding on. And there's people who are raised in this world with this kind of thinking. The latest rage in terms of movies is Hunger Games. How many of you have seen it? Hunger Games is World 5, mainly. It's not really conflict and vindication. It's really about World 5, and it's about suffering and those people who are sent out is that little ray of hope for them in terms of their world. But if you look at those people, when I saw that world in which she came out of and became one of those champions, I looked at it and I said, oh my God, that's West Virginia coal miners. I spent 23 years in Western Kentucky, and Western Kentucky is coal mining. Now, I don't know if you've ever been around coal mining, but back in the 30s and the 40s, it was something that was, you suffered and you endured it. And people would go to work. And then there was the slow walk home from the mines. And if you've ever been to Kentucky, one of the things that I noticed when I first moved there is that a lot of people I went to visit, you walk in the front door, you know what's right there? A shower. Because they come in with all that black coal dust on them, and the first thing they have to do is take a shower. And all that is, so you got to find a lot of homes down in Kentucky, Western Kentucky, West Virginia, I expect is the same way, where you literally walk in the house and you go right straight to the shower. Because you're covered from head to foot with all that black coal dust. And the black lung is one of the diseases that comes from coal mining. And these people, you kind of got that. If you remember in that Hunger Games, the picture of the eyes of the people that were watching, it's you don't look back and you really don't look forward. You just take it as it comes. One day in this life is enough. And sometimes even that's too much. Suffering. And so you deal with just enough to make it. And those people down there and a lot of people in this world, we got just enough to make it. Unless something happens. It's life lived near the edge. Suffering. It's the law of diminishing returns. Back when I was probably in grade school or so, some of you are old enough to remember a guy by the name of Tennessee Ford. Tennessee Ernie Ford? Well, he sang a song about those coal miners. 16 tons, and what do I get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, because I can't come. I owe my soul to the company store. It was a way of life. Suffering, enduring, black lung, the accidents in coal mines, broken people. And you, if you get out of it, you don't talk about it, but you never forget. This is a hard world. This is the Depression era world. This is the world that my father grew up in. Blessed are those who expect nothing, for they shall not be disappointed. I remember my dad talking to my brother about money. And if you know my brother, he's a stockbroker. And, of course, my dad trusted my brother with what he had. And I remember him saying this. He said, "I've been poor once, and I don't want to ever be that again." My dad was poor. He grew up in the Depression. We don't know what poor is these days, I don't think. I mean, people that came out of that Depression were battle-scarred and road-weary. You see something else in the eyes of people like this, miners and mountain folk and Depression-era people and cancer victims. You sometimes see it in their eyes. It's a determination with a touch of farewell. Freedom. Well, you remember Janis Joplin. Some of us can remember her. Freedom is just another word for what? Nothing left to lose. That's this world. Suffering. And a word of power that comes out of this suffering world of endurance is when you've been close to death so often, it can't get you. And you can live all right if you're just not afraid of dying. Most of you in the last 10 years have seen Lord of the Rings or been aware that it's out there. It's a story that is written by J.R.R. Tolkien, and he wrote it in the 50s or the late 40s, and he was in England. The Lord of the Rings is really a World 5 story, umbrellaed. There is some of World 2 always because you got conflict in it and vindication, but it's really a World 5 because it's about suffering and endurance. It was written during that time of World War II, and really also, I'm sure it came to his mind between World War I and World War II. And these people, the hobbits especially, but everybody in the movie is tired. They're tired of the struggles and their endurance that they have to put forth constantly just to get there. And Tolkien was writing in history and the context of his history. And it's about suffering and enduring that suffering. And also dealing with the law of diminishing returns. Getting old is not for cowards. And when you go see the old ones are the strong ones because they're the survivors. And for World 5, you know, in World 3, emptiness is a problem. And you're dealing with it, and it's coming out of yourself. And World 1, trying to find home, that's the problem and everything. But in World 5, it is not that at all. Life is not the problem. Life is not a problem to be solved anyway. It is a problem to be endured. And it has an aura about it, endurance that touches with wisdom. And just to live has its own answers. I have survived all of this. I have endured. and the old that are strong have endured all of this. Endurance in suffering. In scriptures, in the story of Abraham, which is chapters 12 to 22 of Genesis, they deal with Abraham moving at the age of 75 and Sarah, who is barren. And they endure their lives hoping for that child to be born. But Sarah is barren for 25 years. And then she becomes too old to have children. And then she has a child. And they name the child Isaac because it's laughable that I'm this old and now God is going to give me a child. I've endured all my life, and now? It's not world two. It is enduring in history. And then, at the age of 12, God tells Abraham to take Isaac to the mountain and sacrifice him there. And Abraham goes to that mountain with Isaac in tow. For 3 days they walk there. And you know what he's walking in? He is walking in obedient despair. Suffering. Don't you think that he is suffering all the way there? He can't see how, what has this got to do with anything, God? But he goes and he does it anyway. It's not world two. It's not conflict in history. It's the obedience that has despair with it. Life is not a problem to be solved. It's a thing to be endured. Now, world five requires that you pay attention to the little things of life. Events that call forth power and nostalgia. It's when you see, you're awed when you see someone who is old. As you remember what they were like in the power of life. I recently have been walking to World War II in HD. And the guys that are talking about this stuff, and they're old. Of course, they're dead now, but because it was done a while back. But they were old men. And they're talking about the endurance of those days in World War II. And you skip pictures of them when they were young and strong like bull, you know. 18, 19 years old. Their war stories, their war heroes, their glory days, kind of like Bruce Springsteen used to see. And yet the agony, the despair, the endurance of the suffering that went with our soldiers, and that's the ones that they're talking about in World War II. And it really isn't always about the conflict and the vindication of defeating Japan and defeating Germany. It was about the struggle that goes with it and the suffering that went with it. You know, in The Wizard of Oz, which I've done a sermon on, and she gets up there and she's got, there's no place like home. And that's World One, by the way. But she sings this song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And that song is not Kansas. Kind of looked like Illinois to me. But it was a place, someplace over the rainbow is a place that is not filled with drudgery, the suffering, the hardness of life that is all underneath everything. Kind of like some of the ways that you live your lives, the struggles of life. And she sang this Somewhere Over the Rainbow. There's a place for me. World 5 addresses all of the darkness of the other worlds. It addresses the darkness of abandonment and someone looking for home. It addresses the conflict in terms of how we struggle in this life to make things right. It addresses the meaning of life and the lack of it. And it addresses the guilt that we have in our life. Suffering is what happens. Someone once wrote this, and buddy, I've lived it. One does not soon forget a slow dying. When I was 27 years old, I was the associate pastor in, this was when I was 25, I think. I moved to Western Kentucky. When I moved there, it was like a lot of churches and everything. What I encountered was that there were more women than men in church, as usual. But a lot of the husbands don't go and all this. There was a guy there. His wife was very faithful. And I went to see her husband. And I kind of struck up a friendship with this guy. His name was Jess. And I got to talking to him about life and stuff. And we were in such a way that we became friends. And he actually started coming to church. He's about 80. I was about 27 or so. So he was an old man. I know, when you're 27, you know old. He started coming to church, and after a while, we were talking one time. He said, you know, Jack, I'm not much on church, and I'm not much on preachers, but you're all right. And I said, thanks, Jess. I'm glad to know it. Well, Jess developed abdominal cancer. And he spent 2.5 months in the hospital dying, suffering. It was horrible. I mean, it was like war. I would get called at all kinds of times during the day, but I get called more than six times anyway. Come to the hospital because he's dying. And I'd get there, and man, it was war, but he'd pull out of it. And all I could think about, I mean, I functioned out of World 3. You know, what is the meaning of all this stuff that's going on here? But I saw it was suffering for him, and it was suffering for his wife, and it was suffering for me when I was involved in that man's dying days. And when he died, I don't know where he went. I don't know if he went to heaven or hell or wherever, because I'm not sure where he was. And then after that happened, I had another woman. Her name was Frances. And doggone it, if she didn't get the same kind of cancer, and this cancer was eating her up, and she went through the same traumatic 2 or 3 months in terms of fighting that and watching her die, and it was a horrible, God-awful death. And you kind of rail at God at that point. What is the point in this? Now, I know that we're all sinners in the sight of God in need of His forgiveness, and there's not one of us that's worth a nickel. But if there's anybody that's worth 3 cents, this woman was. She was good stuff from the core. But the thing about suffering is, it's immoral. It's not anything. And I watched her die. And I watched her suffer through it. And you endure it. And I watched her husband endure it. And you wonder, what is going on here? For my world, I said, what's the point in all this? I had another woman that was in a nursing home. And she was 50 years old. And she had rheumatoid arthritis so bad that she had been bedridden for a couple years when I got there. And she was the meanest snake of a woman I've ever met in my life. I mean, I could not stand to go see her because she was a witch with a B in front of it. And part of me said, you know, this woman, if anybody deserves this, she does. But I watched her suffer and suffer and suffer through it. And I watched her fight the fight that goes with it. And yet, from where I stood, it's what's the point? That's world three, but to endure it is the key in world five. To endure it. Paul writes in Romans, he talks all about it in Romans chapter 8. He said, we're being killed all the day long. We are regarded as sheep to be slaughtered. In other words, we're here to be suffer. And this is where you see life purged of fantasy. You know, if this is all there is, folks, we are much to be pitied. Nietzsche wrote, that which does not kill me makes me stronger. Endurance is what that says. Enduring suffering. But if this is all there is, we're much to be pitied. You know, I've kind of come to the conclusion, you know why there are so many Jewish comedians and black comedians? I think the reason is because they understand this world. They have lived in this world more so than others. The Jewish people have been enduring that kind of persecution for 2,500 years. And all the anti-Semitism that goes with it and everything that is. And they know how to make fun of life. Have you ever noticed that about them? And now that our society allows black comedians really to get up there, I think they know about the sufferings of life. And part of that humor that they come up with is a way to save themselves. Because otherwise, you would be like Job in weariness and tears all the time. I have a book here. I'm going to read a quote out of it. It's Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. It is probably one of the most profound books I have ever read in my life. But he talks about humor. And he was in the death camps of Germany. And he writes this. He was a Jewish psychoanalyst. It is well known that humor, more than anything else in the human makeup, can afford an aloofness and an ability to arise above any situation, even if only for a few seconds. The attempt to develop a sense of humor and to see things in a humorous light is some kind of a trick learned while mastering the art of living. Yet it is possible to practice the art of living even in a concentration camp, although suffering is omnipresent. Do you know that the Jews in the concentration camps at one point held a court and they put God on trial because of all the suffering? And they put God on trial in terms of that. And how do I pray to a God who causes me all this suffering? How do I pray to a God that I can't even believe in because of this? And the Jews put God on trial at one point. Human history is tragedy in this world. The cross is foolishness without a resurrection. You need to hear that. The cross is foolishness without a resurrection. In world one, self cannot get himself out of life and its end. In world two, history does not solve the basic problems of human existence through conflict. Therefore, the eternal ground of our existence is eternally significant. Tragic in this life, faith completes our ignorance. In those death camps in Germany, God was on trial. They wanted to convict him of all this suffering. And unless you can look past this life, it's all tragedy. Because then, if you can't get past this life, I need to pray to that God in which I no longer believe. And how do I do that? And out of the suffering, the light comes. And it comes from the center of a person who is so fatigued from the suffering that they can no longer handle it. They're faint yet pursuing. And it's out of that desperation at the bottom of the pit that the very question of God comes out. Suffering is at the center, and it drives us into asking this. In this universe as ghetto, is God our executioner, or is he a victim with us? Now, this is heavy stuff, folks. I mean, when you get right down to it, and actually, I'm not going to run down any of these ways, because all of them, when you get into the dark side of any of them, they're pretty heavy. But this is the heaviest one, because they really all kind of funnel into this. Our hope in this world, in world five, is that God, too, is a victim. And from him, we can find our power to endure the suffering of life. And the darkness of this is the essence of the question is to really be without an answer. You know, if Jesus is the answer, what's the question? What is the question? The darkness in world one is the universe and just not being able to be one with the universe. In world two, it's all about the history and time and the conflict that things aren't right. In world three, it's about the emptiness of self. In world four, it's about the demonic nature of self. And in world five, it's life itself, plagued, engulfed, controlled, powerless, wronged, victim. And thus, the issue is not the situation, but how do you respond to the suffering? How do you endure the suffering? And it comes out of resoluteness and steadfastness and a will, strong will, and integrity as tenacity. But the obsessive question of the darkness is this: am I a victim all alone? I don't know how many of you have seen the movie Notting Hill. But Notting Hill is a Hugh Grant movie, and it's kind of set in England, and it's a great chick flick. But it's set into British kind of humor, and Hugh Grant's a group of people that are what I would call losers of the world. And they're all sitting around this dinner table, and they're raising up all of their suffering. And then somebody will bring up something that is, you know, what's wrong in their world. And then they'll toast to the suffering. And they're just sitting around a table doing this together. And it's almost like they draw strength from one another's suffering to gain a little bit of a spark of victory. There's a song out a long time ago by Peggy Lee, "Is This All There Is?" And maybe we can just leave this life with honor. It may be a tragedy, but maybe we can endure it and do it with honor. From this world, it's all about suffering. Life is suffering. And the day you were born, your luck ran out. You're much to be pitied. We're much to be pitied if this is all there is. And so salvation comes from honor of enduring suffering, to know and to endure, the knowing life is a tragedy. Don't quit before you're finished. That's what my dad always said. Don't quit before you're finished. To endure the many offenses to our egos that we get thrown at, the wounds of our minds and our spirits and our emotions, our bodies that age and hearts that grow tired, to endure with honor. And the other thing about this world is we're in this together. Nobody knows the trouble I've seen. Nobody but Jesus. And nobody knows the trouble you've seen either. Nobody but Jesus. But we're in this together. And the light shines, begins to come from endurance of that which is common to all of us. It's the old men showing the young men how to build a fishing boat. It's the old men showing the young men how to take care of their wives. It's the old men showing the young men how to do a job. It's the old women showing the young women how to have faith, how to take care of their husbands, how to take care of their kids. It's the old women doing these things, the little things, to help us get through this life. World 5. The light shines in the endurance. You know, when somebody has a tragedy, you know, loss of loved one, spouse, child, good friend, loss of job, or have been dealt a blow that is like you've got cancer or you're dealing with this. You know, one of the things that we tell people to do is to do the little things of life, don't we? Just keep doing all those little things that you do day in and day out. It's kind of like that's the therapy. There's tragedy in life, but you got to do the little things and keep going. The things that we've been doing. Countless, repetitious, insignificant things are that kind of quiet monument that helps us endure life. Now, this is this world. World 5 really kind of unites all of us. And we're talking about people here who live in different worlds or who see the world with a different lens, and we all have different ways of envisioning things. But it brings us to understanding, even in conflict, to be in this world is to be overwhelmed. To be in World 1 is to be at home or abandoned. In World 2 is to be a winner or a loser, or to strive to be that winner. In World 3, it is to be or not to be. That is the question. In World 4, it's to be guilty or forgiven. But in this world, it's to be overwhelmed. And how do I struggle with that suffering and endure one day at a time with little that I can change, but getting by doesn't get it either. Endurance as survival, the light comes from the perseverance. Hope is endurance. You know, when Faulkner received the Nobel Peace Prize, He said this in his speech. He said, "I believe that man will not merely endure, he will prevail. Because he has a soul, a spirit capable of compassion and sacrifice and endurance." Now that sounds the trumpet of eternal. What if this is all there is, folks? What if this is all there is? World two, vindication comes from conflict, the result of conflict. But in this world, it's the quality of life that we live out in face of the inevitable. It's the sheer will to cause us to want to survive in having nothing or doing or being or wanting nothing, common poverty, endurance that prevails. This world is the great leveler, because rich and poor, doesn't matter what race you are, what gender you are, it doesn't matter. We're brought to it. Suffering is in knowing our misery. Bonhoeffer, the Jewish Christian theologian in Germany during the Second World War, he said, "We must learn to regard people less in the light of what they do or omit to do, and more in the light of what they suffer." And as I said, humor is a kind of answer to this world. That's why I think so many comedians can come to laugh about the tragedies, the sufferings of life, is better than to cry about them all the time. And so humor becomes a real player in this one. It's the courage to render endless repetitions comic. And we have a sacrament of defeat that we go with. We are condemned to roll a stone up a mountain only to have it roll back down again. The struggle is enough. In Genesis 3:17, you kind of hear this world when we are kicked out of Eden. It says, "And to Adam he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you." There's a whole sermon in that right there, I think. That's a joke, ladies. "Because you have listened to the voice of your wife. You shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth to you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken. You are dust, and to dust you shall return. In toil you shall eat. In the sweat of your face you shall eat. You are dust, and to dust you shall return." Life is not right. Existence is cursed. Other worlds up here are concerned with why. This one is concerned with how to live deeply in the core of life in spite of the suffering that we have. How do we do that? Suffering in World 4 is the result of guilt. In World 5, it's just the undeserved refiner's fire that is poured out upon us. I'm going to read a couple of scriptures to you, which kind of Paul writes in 2 Corinthians that speak to this world. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9. Paul is writing about the thorn in the flesh, okay? This was this thing that was bugging the fire out of him and causing him to have all kinds of trouble. In fact, I'll back up a few verses. And to keep me from being too elated by the abundance of revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from being too elated. Three times I besought the Lord about this, that it should leave me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. The undeserved refiner's fire. Philippians chapter 4. Where are you, Philippians? There you are. Verses 12 and 13. I know how to be abased. That is, I know how to be poor. And I know how to abound. That is, I can know how to live with resources. In any and all circumstances, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and want. I can do all things in him who strengthens me. I can endure all things in him who strengthens me. I can take care of suffering through Christ who strengthens me. Jesus is central to a lot of World 5. Nature doesn't get it done. History is not the answer, as in World 2. Self, you're not going to find all that meaning in yourself one way or the other. Guilt is not the problem either. But in Jesus, we see the suffering servant. Jesus is more how than what is God doing. He is the one who suffers on our behalf. He's the one who gives us the victory over life. In Ephesians chapter 6, when we did the whole thing on spiritual warfare, we went through all the armor of God. But one thing about these verses, finally, be strong in the Lord and the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. And he says, stand three or four times in this scripture that you might be able to stand. In The Lord of the Rings, Pippin is talking to Baragon. He says, Baragon asks him, do you see any hope that we shall stand? And the Nazgul shadow passes over them and the scream of that bird takes place, and Pippin says, no, my heart will not despair. We may stand, if only on one leg, or at least be left still upon our knees. That's endurance. Christ suffers for us. Hope is in the crucifixion and the resurrection. The essence of endurance is shared suffering. Compassion that is born of being together. The heart of Christianity is loyalty to one another in the problems, the trials, the sufferings of life. In World 1, nature, being in its beauty, is the call to the light. But in World 5, it's the wilderness. It's the desert. You talk about Jesus and the temptations in the wilderness. World 1 is emotional. World 5 is volitional. It's by choice. The wilderness is a place where you endure. It's a place where you are willing to survive. It begins with God and he says, go. Abraham and Sarah were told to go. Moses spent 40 years in the wilderness suffering, long suffering with all those sheep. Before God says, I want you to go take care of my sheep. World 5 brings all the world together, I think. Because suffering is the crucible. Now, how that suffering occurs within the context of other worlds, in terms of the epiphany of them, whether it's guilt or self or history or home, they endured. They endured. World 5 is to surrender to God's will. Every day is a place where you prove again that you can do nothing. And when you are resigned to that, that you can't do anything and that you suffer, then that's when the light begins to happen. God for the world is long-suffering. Now, we're going to stop here. Next week, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. Next week, I'm going to kind of put all five of these worlds together because I've not got done on any of these weeks of what the things that I've gotten. So I'm going to do little cuts out of all five of them, and I'm going to give you a test that you can take home so that you can find out or get an idea of where you belong in the context of how you see the world. Okay? So that'll be next week. Then the following week, we're going to have a service here at 6 o'clock because I'm going to be in Vegas. Pray for me. And getting ready to do the Women's Great Banquet. So, but next week we'll be here and we will kind of encapsulate all five of these together. And I'll give you something to take home with you because it's too long to do it here. It'll probably take you an hour if you take time to really do it. And so you can also score yourself. That way you kind of know where you are. And then we'll start the light side of this stuff when I come back from Vegas. God knows I may need some light then. But then again, who knows? You know, I know that God showed up in Vegas in 1984 in Oh God, You Devil. So I also know that I carry the light within me. So we'll see what happens. Let's pray. Lord, I ask that anything I said tonight that's worthy of your name, that kind of gives us an idea of who we are in your sight and the way our lives are, that you would bless it, that you would bring light into our lives, the light of understanding. And I ask that you bless us in Jesus' name. Amen.